Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life. And welcome to Idle Red Hands. I'm Chris.
I'm Wayne.
I'm Lyle.
And I've got a cold. Sorry, everybody.
Wow, all right.
Yes.
I think you did that just to prove you had a cold.
No, it was actually there waiting for it.
Right.
Yeah. But it's all good. I got like the super low dulcet tones, so welcome to Radio Idle Red Hands kind of thing. But
from your 3 a.m. to 4 a.m., we'll be taking you through the day.
Exactly.
Hey, you know, sorry, I know we should have segged with the horror movies to our topic, but I saw this thing for Corey Feldman. You remember Corey Feldman?
Who is that?
Yes.
Lost Boys.
Oh, okay.
I guess he was in Goonies. Man, I really don't remember the movie Goonies, because I did not know him. He's in Stand By Me.
Hmm.
And he rents his mansion out for these $250 parties, like a person.
Whoa. Uh-huh.
And he has this thing called like Feldman's Angels, something like Playboy Bunnies.
Okay.
Interesting. Yeah.
And then you can rent an hour in his hot tub for, let's say $500.
With angels or without?
Didn't specify.
Hmm.
With security. And you can rent a cabana with the angels for $2,500.
Hmm.
And if you go online, there's like some pictures of, I think the website's called Vice.
Mm-hmm.
And they took pictures of the party, and boy, was it lame.
Yeah, well, I was just thinking, you know, if I'm the kind of person who has the money to spend on, you know, a $250 ticket to a party, I don't think that I'd want to spend it to say, hey, I went to Corey Feldman's mansion for a party. Yeah!
Yeah, good point.
Well, there was the angels.
This is true.
Yeah, but again, as Chris said, if you're paying that much money, I'm sure you could get someone, you know, that actually has a bit more cred.
You could probably go to a party that has Playboy bunnies.
Yeah, there you go.
Instead of Feldman's angels.
Yeah. Anyway, I thought that was pretty funny.
I agree.
And the angels looked horrific. No, I'm kidding. They just looked like well used.
Man.
They looked worn. Yeah.
Jeez.
Well, worn is softer than well used. Jeez.
Previously enjoyed. They actually had the stickers on there. I don't know. I think you got those from like a closing Blockbuster.
Oh, jeez.
Well, we finally started the Pathfinder campaign over Skype.
And I have to say, I am pretty impressed with the Roll20 tools.
Site? Tools, yep.
Yeah, absolutely. Roll20.org is fantastic.
Yeah.
No, it's good. And we're playing with video. We were going to go with Google Hangouts, but it didn't work for us, so we opted for Skype.
Mm-hmm.
And all of us but Yujiro have cameras.
Yes.
But you don't even really need the cameras. I mean, as we said before in the episode about online play, just the map that we're using, the map whiteboard combo,
mm-hmm.
at least for me, is enough of a visual to curtail some of the distractions that we talked about before when playing with just voice over IP.
I don't know. It'd be like, do you want to play a role-playing game and stare at the map on the table?
Okay, fair enough. But, I mean, it is a slightly interactive map, so you can do like Lyle and have your character move from the chair to the standing position a lot. But I'm not saying that you should turn off video and, being able to see each other is that much or curtails distraction that much more, but...
Well, the video's working well for me. And it's not so much being able to see everybody. It's more that everybody's able to see me. So
right.
They can kind of tell if, I start staring off into the distance or something like that. It keeps me focused.
Now, conversation without visual cues can be tricky.
Yeah, absolutely. And the video lends really well to Lyle's character. He's playing kind of a spy, mysterious guy, and he's got this microphone stand that looks like he has tented fingers up in front of the screen the whole time.
I so thought he was tenting his fingers like Dr. Evil style in front of his face the whole time. Yeah.
Yeah, my stand has a pantyhose, flesh color pantyhose, so it looks like hands.
Real men wear pantyhose on their microphones.
Apparently, I'm not a real man. All right.
What do you use, Wayne?
I'm just using my headset, which I can't attach a pantyhose ring over.
You could wrap pantyhose around your head.
I Oh, where am I head? Why would I want that? Anyway.
Hey, you could rob a bank. And then there you go. Okay, I guess not.
You know.
This would be our third annual Month of Horror. So from the second week of October, we'll kick off the Month of Horror properly. And all of the episodes for the rest of the month will have a horror theme. So to start it off, we'll do Creature Features and the Inquisition.
And man, I gotta say, the Inquisition, I didn't know how horrible it was going to be, but everything I read about them, they just got more and more horrific.
Really?
Yeah.
So like all our Creature Features, we're going to start with who the Inquisition was in fact and fiction. And then we're looking at playing them as protagonists and antagonists. And I guess Chris is not going to have much to say about the protagonist.
If you want to be a jerk, play an Inquisitor.
So I guess to start off, there's a few. I mean, I suppose the most famous is the Spanish Inquisition. But there's actually a few Inquisitions that you could really consider, such as the ones that came before the medieval Inquisitions.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Then there's also the Portuguese Inquisition and the Roman Inquisition.
Mm-hmm.
Not ancient Rome, but obviously about the Vatican.
Yes.
So the medieval Inquisition, maybe when it started properly?
Yeah, when it became an organization unto itself called the Inquisition.
Well, I think it was around 12th century.
Yeah.
Yeah, in France, according to my notes.
yes, mine too.
And it was against, I think initially, the Cathars.
Yeah, both the Cathars and, I'm probably going to butcher this, but the Waldensians.
Mm-hmm.
Waldensians?
Yeah,
that sounds about right.
Yeah, I'm glad you tried it instead of me. You know, I was surprised. Again, I didn't know very much about the Inquisition beforehand, so I was surprised as to what their original mission was and how it kind of changed over their existence. In the beginning, it seemed that it was more against sectarianism and the spread of, I guess, disbelief or alternate versions of beliefs. This is pre-Protestantism, but things like Protestantism.
Do you actually think it changed? their mission changed? Because the goal or the task I put down in Inquisition as having, where they were an organization intended to eliminate heresy and other doctrine contradictory to their teachings. And of course, this is especially related to the Catholic faith, if we're talking about reality. And I guess maybe they did change slightly, but for the most part, they were concerned with people who were already of the Catholic faith. Especially Jews and Muslims and even Hindus in certain places that had converted to Catholicism.
Mm-hmm.
And their goal was to kind of prevent them from backsliding to their original religious practices.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
The conversos.
Right.
Yeah, like the Cathars, I mean, in our more secular world, we would look at their thinking and especially the Waldensians. I mean, that you're looking at just different interpretations. I mean, the Cathars believed in dualism, so I suppose it'd be like Gnostics.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But the Waldensians, they just like disagreed on certain, you know, articles of faith, and that they still believed in one God and that.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you're right.
No, but it's all, I'm agreeing with what you're saying. It's all heresy. I mean, what is heresy becomes very, very broad. I mean, you're looking at blasphemy, sodomy,
right.
Bigamy, something else with me.
Witchcraftery?
Witchcraftery.
Although that didn't get added until later. Or sorcery.
Sorcery.
Yeah. No. I think that's a good point. And I'm certainly not defending what the Inquisition did, and they did some pretty horrible stuff. But from their perspective, anything that was not the Catholic faith, but was still kind of under that umbrella of Christianity, was heresy, as you kind of said. Mm-hmm. And if you think about how much power the church had at the time, well, anyone who challenges that, especially gets kind of a large enough movement, that's dangerous. You don't want them around. So, you know, I'm sure they had their own self-interest, you know, in mind here when the Inquisition was formed, but that's kind of just what they did. No, what you're preaching is heresy, even if to us modern-day people it sounds very similar. It's different enough where, nope, sorry, you can't teach that.
Yeah, they even came into conflict with other religious groups like the Knights Templar.
Right.
I guess there was some inquisition of them as well because they were traveling around collecting all of these ancient idols and statues and things like that. And so the inquisitors accused them of idolatry.
Well, they were collecting all the money from the royalty through their banking system.
See. The excuse was idolatry.
Right.
Yeah. And one of the excuses was that they had uncovered, I'm sure different idols as well, but, you know, because they had the church in Jerusalem, the dome. Mm-hmm. One of the rumors was they uncovered all of these things, including this head, which they worshipped, and it was part of their rituals, like kissing it and swearing allegiance to it. And, I mean, there's a good example of just torturing people into confessions.
Right.
And I think a lot of them actually didn't confess and were just burned.
So they were unrepentant.
Yeah, but, yeah, I mean, that's the Knights Templar is a very, very good case of the Inquisition being used to fulfill secular ends.
Right.
Yeah.
I thought it was kind of interesting in doing the research that the, at least when they were set up, the Inquisition was not really supposed to dole out any punishment. Mm-hmm. They were supposed to, after the person confessed, then they were supposed to turn the criminal over to secular authorities for punishment.
One theory is they were there to defend or protect people from unjust executions and prosecution.
The thing I read about the process seems, if not similar to modern judicial system, like the person actually has to be accused, and then a group of inquisitors went over the charge in secret to determine whether it was important enough. I mean, then the person was detained, and then there was an actual a trial.
Mm-hmm.
But and again, like yeah, they used torture to elicit confessions.
Mm-hmm.
But it's possible that what they did was more just, or at least had the potential to be more just than accusing someone and killing them right there. You know?
Yeah. No. Absolutely. I mean. No, I don't know what Chris is talking about with these guys being horrible. sounds pretty great to me.
Yeah, I was reading about in the 15th century, about how they because there was a lot of problems, they cleaned up the Inquisition so that they stopped using torture on everybody and only used torture on those who were unwilling to confess their crimes.
Right. I mean, there you go. All around nice guys, yeah. Because prior to that, they used torture on everybody. You know, old people, kids, you name it. People got tortured.
Yeah, I was reading about how it was, as you mentioned before, Wayne, that they used a lot of the torture and some of the horrible punishments to show to other people just how horrible the Inquisition was and how little you wanted to mess with them. In that, when the Inquisition arrived in a town that was, you know, had given into a heresy, they would allow a certain period, like 20 to 40 days, for people to come forward and admit their sins and be absolved before the Inquisition actually began taking people who were accused of certain crimes.
Yeah, that was called the Edict of Grace.
Yeah.
And I think, it was kind of around, 30 to 40 days.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it was after the 15th century, they were changed with the Edicts of Faith,
mm-hmm.
which cut out that grace period for people to submit themselves or confess to their own crimes.
Yeah.
And instead, it encouraged essentially other people to snitch on them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that was also part of the Edicts of Grace, but the Edicts of Faith just wrote that out and said, nope, if you have a problem with a neighbor or something else you saw, feel free to supply us with that information.
Yeah. I suppose that was one of the few ways where you could get away or decrease the amount of torture you would undergo is by naming others.
Yeah. We just said that, that joke about, oh, the Inquisition doesn't seem that bad, but that kind of paranoia is part of what makes the Inquisition so horrific and terrifying for me, where, during the period when Inquisitors were kind of looking into whether charges should be brought or not, they were very secretive about it, and the charges were brought anonymously, so you never knew who would report on you, and there could also be long periods of detention. Kind of like, modern day, what's the word I'm looking for?
Solitary?
No. I'm thinking more about like, Guantanamo Bay and, you just kind of get locked up with no rights and you kind of disappear. Mm-hmm. Or, you have to, sometimes I read you had to walk around with like a red X sewn on your clothes, which meant you were under inquisitorial investigation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that whole thing about not knowing when you're going to be hauled in to be tortured and questioned, and if someone is looking in on you, that makes the Inquisition and Inquisitors really scary.
Absolutely. I mean, the things that the Inquisition called mercy, were even those were absolutely horrific. I think I was reading when someone had been convicted of being a heretic, but they decided to repent beforehand, they would still be burned for being a heretic, but they would have the luxury, the mercy of being strangled beforehand.
Yeah, well, that's better. Honestly, that's better than being burned alive.
Granted, but that's your idea of mercy? Holy cow. Well, and the thing, when somebody's accused and they brought him in, to pay for the trial for the work of the Inquisitors, they would seize all the goods of the accused and sell it off to pay for it. So even if he did somehow get let out, he'd go back to nothing.
Yeah, a lot of times families were put in debt because they had to pay for the detention period of the accused. Or like Lyle brought up when you mentioned the Knights Templar, Chris, being accused of heresy or another crime was often a way for the church to get a hold of money, especially mm-hmm. from rich Jews and Muslims in certain areas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they would confiscate things. That's what the King of France did to the Templars.
Right.
Everybody played along so they could confiscate and they didn't owe the money back.
Mm.
But I suppose if somebody's accused of a crime now, legal fees could be crippling.
Right.
So.
True, true.
Are we that far away? Yeah.
Well,
depends which country you're in.
Yeah. Yeah, similar to what Chris said about, you know, the Inquisitor rolling into a town, or the Inquisition rolling into a town, and scaring people. There was something I read from the 1578 Inquisitor's Handbook, and I'm not going to try and say the Latin, because this isn't a Warriors, so I don't have to struggle with the language.
I'll give it a shot.
No thanks. Translated, it says, "For punishment does not take place primarily for the correction and good of the person punished, but for the public good in order that others may become terrified and weaned away from the evils they would commit." And I think that is, or that wraps up the whole idea of an inquisitor, is you're not punishing this person to save their soul or to correct them or whatever. You are punishing them horrifically to terrify the remaining populace into being good.
Yeah. I saw a quote from the famous Spanish Inquisitor, Torquemada, where he said he very much regretted his leniency when, instead of having young children accused of witchcraft burned, he only had them sentenced to be flogged while they watched their parents burn.
I feel like a real terrible person for laughing at that, but...
Yeah. But on the plus side, you know, the Inquisitors, they didn't really have to worry about doing all of these horrible things in the eyes of God, because apparently the Pope said that Inquisitors can forgive each other of their sins.
Well, is it a sin to, root out heresy and punish people who are committing sins?
If they die, yeah. I mean, murder is, so.
You know, when they were, you know, accusing people and putting people on trial for sodomy, I think it was like close to 20% were clergy.
Really? Huh. I was, one of the things that I read was, about one of the reasons that it was so difficult to stop the Inquisition is because the church had rules that it required a certain number of people to serve as witnesses against, members of the church. Sorry, I didn't take it down in my notes, but it was something like, if you're going to accuse a bishop of, overzealous Inquisition, you'd need something like 50 people to witness against him in order for any kind of trial to move forward. So. Not to contradict what you're saying. I'm sure it's correct, but I'm surprised to hear it.
Yeah, but a clergy, not bishops. Probably you need a lot less for.
Yeah, probably
a priest.
Local priest, one or two guys would do it. Hey.
Yeah, like accuse what 90% clergy, 6% nobles, 37% workers, 19% servants, 18% soldiers and sailors. Really, sailors only 18%.
That's the other thing that makes them so scary, in my opinion, is they have the weight of this giant organization behind them, protecting them.
Mm.
Well, yeah, I mean, that was the nature of the beast, I guess. And they had that organization protecting them well into the 20th century.
Right.
Yeah.
Even now.
Yeah, to this day. Not inquisitors, but still. The Catholic Church.
Yeah, so when we talk about 20th century... And you think of things like, the movie Vampires?
I don't think I've seen that.
All right. No, you don't. Okay, John Carpenter's Vampires. I think it's based on a book.
Okay.
And it's got James Wood. And he's from the Catholic Church.
Hmm.
And they hunt vampires. Oh. So just like in The World of Darkness, there is an organization called the Inquisition that hunts the supernatural. Even in the most recent Hunter book, Hunter the Vigil.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool.
They've got a Catholic Church organization.
Little do they know that the Lancia Sanctum, Catholic vampires.
Oh, yeah, and they actually have vampires who are, well, I guess we've just lumped Inquisition and Catholics all the same.
Well, yeah, okay.
Every Catholic, just the Inquisition, yeah. But I mean, these are organizations dedicated to hunting the supernatural. And yeah, the Lancian Sanctum, or if you look at the old style, the La Sombra, but a lot of control within the Catholic Church.
I could see the Inquisition being spun out, as it has been, into modern and science fiction settings, because it didn't come into the actual Inquisition until later, but yeah, combating sorcery and witchcraft, you know, supernatural stuff, was one of the things they did, and well, probably, you know, didn't really find much actual proof. But if you take that to a, you know, a science fiction or a fantasy setting, well, then, yeah, that kind of stuff is going to exist.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny. Superstitions was something that they would put people on trial for.
For being superstitious?
Mm-hmm. Right. And you got to think, where does a lot of their power come from?
Holy cow.
Mind blown.
Mind blown. Holy cow. That's crazy.
Of course you're superstitious. You believe all this? No. So...
She's a witch. She's superstitious.
Do you believe in witches? Yeah. Okay, how do I...
Hold on, let me think about this question.
Oh, I wish Hella would write Catch-22, because I certainly want to say that right now.
Wow. Because, you know, that was the thing that was so... That made me so, I don't know, angry or upset about the whole... Reading the whole Inquisition thing. It's talking about sorcery and witchcraft, you know, these just killing people en masse for mythological ideas. It drove me crazy, and superstition was one of them. Oh man, wow, just wow.
Yeah, like I said, they're not killing them to save those people. They're killing them to make an example and scare everyone else into being good.
To save others, Wayne. To save.
No,
others.
No, not even save others. Just kind of scare other people.
Scared straight.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so I mean, that's probably the more obvious examples when they actually just take the Inquisition and plop them into. Slightly different setting, hunting slightly different creatures, or really not at all. I mean, if you're hunting witches, you're hunting mages, and you're hunting vampires.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But you could say something like the Sentinels from X-Men, or the Sentinel program is okay. A kind of an Inquisition, hunting mutants.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I hadn't thought of that, but that's a really good one, you know, especially if you're consider the mutants heretical or, you know, the modern version of witches or practicing sorcery, then, yeah, I totally see that working.
Yeah. The Sentinels had the same kind of drive and conviction to getting rid of the mutants as the Inquisitors did of heretics.
Yeah, except if they have things that can detect you. Mm-hmm. So if you have an Inquisition that can just detect heresy, I mean, you could just forego all the confession and that.
Mm-hmm.
So in a sense, that might be worse. I don't know. You don't get strangled before you get burnt.
True.
Because you have the machine that's like, well, we can detect heresy.
Mm-hmm.
And we've detected it. Now you're just going to die.
It's one of those things you're going to die in a spectacular fashion so that the people who watch you behave themselves.
Yep.
Well, if you have a machine, though, it's also one thing because you can kind of show other people a machine and say, yeah, look, he's a mutant or he's a heretic. You know, there it is. But if you had something more of in a fantasy sense where it's a spell, you know, the paladin looks at somebody, squints for a few seconds, says, yep, he's a heretic. Take my word for it. Now kill him. It gets a little bit murkier.
Well, what would the machine do? Oh, look, the machine's red light is flashing. Oh, my God, because that only happens.
Yeah, actually, very good point. Very good point.
You can just have a little box.
Don't mind me pushing this button behind my back.
No, I was thinking about this. I think in a fantasy setting, and maybe this is getting a little bit into playing Inquisitors both as protagonists and antagonists, but like in a fantasy setting where gods are real, such as, you know, your classic D&D setting, I think the Inquisition kind of suffers from the same problem that clerics do, whereas if everybody knows that gods are real and that's provable, well, the Inquisition kind of loses something.
Well,
because who is really going to be a heretic or a non-believer or do that stuff when you can see Asmodeus or Bahamut or whoever walking down the street right there. You know, well, you can actually see kind of the proof of them being there.
I'm going to disagree. Go ahead. But you're disagreeing too, Chris, so go ahead.
Okay, thank you. I actually had that same thought at first, Wayne, but the more I thought about it, the more I figured that people in the Middle Ages, to them, you know, God, witches, werewolves, demons, all of these things were just as real as I think to people who live in fantasy realms. I very much doubt that that most of the populace were very skeptical in that age. So, granted, you know, there's magic and there's proof of miraculous things in fantasy realms that there aren't in the real world, but I honestly don't doubt the amount of belief, that people had back then.
Well, yeah, what are things that are considered heresy? Just disagreeing on the teachings.
Right.
So you can agree that there is a god named, we'll use D&D, Pelor. But you think, no, his teaching isn't anything about combating the undead. You know, he's about healing, but he's not about fighting the undead. He's about all things. Being undead is, you know, living life forever, and that's what Palo really wants or something. Ooh. You know, I mean, you know,
man,
you just twist it.
That's pretty heretical.
Well, yeah, there you go.
Exactly.
No, but you reinterpret the person's teachings, and if you think that you're getting the power from Palo and people believe you, then the Palor Inquisition's got to crack down on you? Because you're starting to convert people.
If you're getting the power from Palor, that's kind of, you know, carte blanche.
No, I'm saying you think you are, but maybe you're not, you know?
Ah, I see what you're saying.
All right, except, well, I mean, it's not real, Chris.
I hate to tell you, but Palor doesn't exist. Oh, blasphemy!
Yeah.
Oh, my life is wasted.
But I do think an Inquisition in a polytheist society.
Mm-hmm.
It's certainly different.
Hmm.
You can't say, you know, the clerics from one church can't necessarily declare the clerics from another church heretics so much or unbelievers.
Right.
But you could say that this city only worships this god, so you root out the believers of these other gods.
Right.
Yeah, and maybe the god will protect them, but I mean, a lot of times, yeah, like, if you take a D&D setting where you have a cleric that's are the only people that really receive power, even though everybody believes in these gods, you know, somebody, like a cleric, grabs them, tortures them, and it's like, where's your god now? He doesn't help you, and he's like, because I'm a rogue. Why did they take those levels? Why didn't they take a level of cleric?
One level of cleric, and I would have been safe. Oh.
Yeah, I could have shown something.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're right, Lyle. There is a historical precedent for, you know, polytheistic societies that had Inquisition. Spain, they had Muslims and Jews there in the Inquisition. They didn't have direct power over them, but still.
Well, no, but that means
a big part of
it's actually all the same guy, Chris.
Yeah, exactly. That's my point, is, you know, what you're saying about how different interpretations of the teachings of a god can be used as an excuse for putting someone under the Inquisition.
Yeah,
right,
I believe
right.
In the Spanish Inquisition, it was, hey, everybody who's not Christian, get out. And if you stay here, you had better be, you know, Catholic. And, yeah, okay, so you converted. And now we're going to follow up to make sure you really are not practicing Judaism or Islam anymore. Oh, hey, you are. Well, time to get burned. So,
yeah.
And I mean, at least at the beginning of the Inquisition, when it was founded, it seems to have been, maybe tolerant is the wrong word, but they seem to have left alone people of other faiths, apart from kicking them out. But, yeah, it was the people who had converted, whether forcibly or otherwise, that they were really interested in, at least at the beginning. Mm-hmm. So, I think in a polytheistic setting, such as D&D, as Lyle said, yeah, you couldn't just, like, haul a worshiper of a different god, you know, Garl Glittergold or whatever, the lame gnome god, you know, an inquisitor of Palor couldn't haul in a worshiper of someone else, you know, at least if you're kind of basing this on the early Inquisition. It would be more like, you know, the people who converted and then, well, maybe you need to keep an eye on them so they don't slip back into, you know, worshiping
that
five-headed dragon.
Rounding up the gnomes and converting them, so you got that racial thing too.
Hmm. Yep.
So you're converting gnomes to start following a different god instead of their one race god.
Racism and religious persecution, not really your typical D&D fare. It's kind of glossed over in most of the books.
Yeah. But you were talking before the podcast about Fading Suns, Chris.
Yeah, yeah. Fading Suns, it has an Inquisitor character. They're part of... Well, basically, the Fading Suns religion is Catholicism in a sci-fi setting. And they are there to root out heresy. This kind of leads into the idea of Inquisitors as protagonists, though. In a sense, the characters still did some pretty horrible things. But the protagonist part of it is that the heresy and... evil and disbelief and sorcery are all real things. So these Inquisitors, while they may still be torturing people, they are actually out saving souls from horrible, horrible evil demons and monsters and things like that.
Mm. Now, protagonist doesn't mean they're good. It just means they're the main character in the story.
Very true. Could be anti-heroes or something.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Yeah, because when you think about another thing you're talking about, Chris, is Warhammer 40K.
Mm. Yes, yes. And which is same thing. Go on,
it's pretty much the same thing, yeah.
What did you say? Witch is very much the same thing.
Yep.
Yes.
I thought you said witches, and I'm like, what?
Witches are the same thing.
Yeah, so their Inquisition is witches. No, actually their Inquisition is, well, the Inquisition.
Right.
Because they're humans, I mean, people have talked about it before, just what a racist, xenophobic, and,
fatalist?
Yeah, sure, fatalist totalitarian society that the Imperials are, that they're actually, the good guys of that world.
Right.
Yeah, so they are the protagonists, even though they have a lot of problems.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that kind of gets into it, though. If you, in your setting, be it sci-fi or fantasy or what have you, there are monsters, there is evil, and either worshipping these things or committing heresies actually puts yourself, your soul, or the lives and souls of others around you in danger, then playing an Inquisitor can be a very good guy kind of role.
Except for the torture part, yeah, okay.
Well, sorry, I was saying maybe one who didn't torture.
Right.
Yeah.
No,
I don't know.
That's true.
I don't know. Because if you look at something like 24, Jack Bauer, I know you guys haven't watched that, but people who've watched that can probably relate that he is the protagonist and the anti-hero of that series. Mm-hmm. And he's the one that will do the things that nobody else is willing to do, including torturing people to get information.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So,
I'm pretty sure I know the answer, but the question I would ask then is he sanctioned by like a higher authority, government or otherwise, to do the things he does?
Himself. Yeah, no, he's sanctioned by, in a sense, the American government.
Right. Because thinking about this, I think that's a very important part about playing an Inquisitor and portraying Inquisitors, because if you're just one guy going around doing this, or woman, without any higher authority to back you up, then you're not an Inquisitor, you're a vigilante.
Hmm. That's a very good point.
Apparently I stopped the conversation.
Yes.
Right. Like,
okay.
Like, I know Batman, right? Batman, we don't think of him as being an Inquisitor, but...
That's right. We think of him as Batman.
Right, exactly. I'm Batman. And, like, he is obviously a vigilante, but he is doing it for... He does kind of have the... I guess the moral right behind him and the law behind him, and unlike other anti-heroes, he doesn't dish out punishment himself very rarely, right? He mostly leaves people tied up for the cops to find him and lets due process take over. So, I mean, there's a bit of a blur between vigilante and Inquisitor there, but...
Yeah, it depends on kind of what era of Inquisitor you're looking at, because there was a point and a place where Inquisitors, as you pointed out earlier, Wayne, they just did the idea of trying people and judging them. But in contrast, there was also other times where they played the role of accuser, judge, and executioner.
Right, but in both of those times, they had the weight and, right or not, the moral authority of the church behind what they were doing.
Absolutely, and I think that's a very important point. I hadn't thought of it myself, but yeah, totally.
So just something to think about if you're going to play Inquisitor.
Well, do you guys think that being that kind of Machiavellian attitude where the ends justify the means of finding your quarry, is that an important point of playing an Inquisitor character?
No. No. I think the important thing would be your faith.
Interesting.
That Because, no, you can have certain... I mean, you can make an Inquisitor that doesn't want to do anything that's against the commandments.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how... I mean, maybe that wouldn't be cool to play, but...
yeah.
But I think it has to start from the faith, maybe? I mean, I don't know. Maybe it, no, maybe not. Well, maybe it's what Wayne says. Is you got to have an organization backing you to punish people, and that's an Inquisition.
I think faith or that some kind of code has to be there. Like, even if, from a character concept, even if you start with the idea of, oh, it's really cool to go around kind of judging and punishing people. No, that's fine, so long as you then say, and I can do it because I'm attached to this order.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you are a vigilante.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The reason I asked that question was because I was trying to imagine a paladin playing an Inquisitor, and it just didn't really fit, because the paladin going around, it's exactly like you said, Wayne, just... killing heretics, see, he's just doing it as himself, but if he's actually assigned to do that by the church, then it becomes something different.
Well, there's lots of paladins that hunt the undead, and not just not really a G-rated, but, you know, certainly a...
PG?
A real black and white kind of Inquisitor. And, I mean, he's not... I mean, he's just hunting them down. I don't know. Is an Inquisitor a hunter? Is an Inquisitor adjudicator? Like, what is that role? But
I don't know, though. To inquire is the base root of the word, so it seems like Inquisitor is not just a matter of going and finding an undead, you know, because it's obvious what is undead, you know, their face is melting off. So that seems easy, but actually kind of finding the evil within society, that seems to be kind of part and parcel for the Inquisitor, but maybe I'm overgeneralizing too.
No, I kind of look at it the same way, because I was thinking the same thing, kind of what differentiates a paladin, say, from an Inquisitor, and, you know, I was looking specifically at kind of the Pathfinder character classes, since we've been playing Pathfinder, and the way I kind of thought of it as, the Paladin is the bone-obvious, I'm going out to destroy evil kind of character, where the Inquisitor is the bit more of the, I'm going out to destroy evil and root out heresies, but I don't have to be completely obvious about it, and sometimes it actually works better for me to be quiet. You know,
I don't know. I think maybe that those are like the fictional accounts to help them distinguish.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, well, you know, the Space Marines are, you know, the broadsword, and the Inquisitor is the, you know, the
dagger in the dark.
Yeah, the dagger in the dark. The guy who will sacrifice his own soul to track and hunt down and root out evil, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But I mean, if you look at the historical one, they're really obvious.
Right.
It's not like they were hidden. They often didn't find evil. It was kind of presented to them.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Declared something evil, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we're not talking about Sean Connery, Name of the Rose. We're talking about guys that, you know, will go into a town and say, okay, here are the witches. Okay. Mm. So it's not, like, I don't really see that. I mean, I think fictionally they've become kind of these investigators.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I think in reality, they were more just judges.
Mm.
And, I mean, I think in reality, I mean, you could have corrupt Inquisitors, but yeah, like Wayne said, they have an organization backing them up, and it's nice to believe that they had some faith.
I think maybe you hit upon something there too, Lyle, where it, historically and realistically, it was probably nice to have someone else deal with this problem with that authority. You know, like you roll into the town and, you know, the town mayor, whatever, says, okay, you know, here are the people we've pegged for heresy. You deal with them.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Inquisitor does, and the town mayor can say, well, you know, that's taken care of. It wasn't me. It was them who did it. You know, they're kind of the, I guess, not the cleanup team, but... Mm.
That's an interesting take, yeah.
Like what you said about Jack Bauer, they're the guys who, you know, are willing to do what other people don't want to do.
They may give it some actually pretty good sense of security, too. What you were just saying, Wayne, about how they roll into a town and they have a list of people who are the witches and then they take care of them and leave. I suppose if you weren't connected with those witches before and you truly believed that all of these things were real, I imagine you would feel really relieved after the Inquisitors left. Like, wow, I didn't know our town was so bad, but thank goodness that's been taken care of.
Right, and you saying that...
maybe. Or maybe they're like, oh, I hope I don't get accused next year. Please, please don't let me get accused next year.
Since we're talking about them as protagonists...
My village is very, very naive.
Yeah. Well, since we're talking about them as protagonists, I think what you just said, Chris, is a way to play a good Inquisitor, right? Like, mm-hmm. You're bringing a sense of peace and safety to these communities that you go through by rooting out and taking care of any evil. Mm-hmm. Or by solving these kind of disputes and by dealing with the things that other people don't have to deal with, so that, you know, there isn't kind of like a black stain on them for executing someone. Mm-hmm. In a sense, you're kind of not really taking on not like a sin eater where you're taking on the sins of, you know, other people to save them, but you're just kind of giving them that peace of mind. And yeah. If you want to play a good Inquisitor, that's a way to do it, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely. And I think the Pathfinder character class does that pretty well, because their power is to cast judgment upon someone. You can play it either as a good person casting judgment on something that is evil, or as an evil one just putting it willy-nilly on whoever you like.
I see. You know, who might actually do it pretty good, or like some sort of Inquisitor style, is True Blood. Well, because when you're looking at, and this touches on what Wayne's saying, is if you don't really have a legal apparatus that's readily available in your towns, they're like a traveling law, like a mm-hmm. traveling courthouse.
Yeah.
And the True Blood had that.
I'm drawing a blank.
Inquisitors or a traveling
Magister.
Courthouse?
Oh, okay.
And he's a vampire judge who presides over the vampires of the one we see in North America.
Right. Right.
And he's, you know, you put your grievances forward and he judges and he punishes.
Right, right.
Hmm.
So you do have your sheriffs that look over these regions, but then you have these magisters that travel around and they are the law. So that could be something that Wedded Inquisitor is. They are the law.
I am the law.
Yeah, so I mean, Judge Dredd, there you go, Inquisitor, in a sense.
Yeah.
Because you judge.
Again, like, I don't know that much about Judge Dredd, but, like, wasn't bringing criminals in alive preferable to actually executing them, despite the fact that, at least in movies and whatnot, that people get shot up a lot?
Yeah, no, I mean, ideally, they're a judge in the sense that, I mean, they have a legal apparatus, but they put all the power in these guys called judges, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they want to bring them in and... But I don't believe there's a trial.
No, they're judged on the spot.
Yeah.
Well, I could see them as being Inquisitors, because, I mean, they are versed in law, and therefore it's, you know, they're invested with this power, as you said, Lyle, to weigh what's going on and pass that judgment right there. So in a sense, I guess they're a fairly short trial, and one person gets to say everything. Or make all the decisions, but it's not as if the judge is making snap decisions based on how they feel. There actually is a code that they're supposed to refer to to back up those decisions.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm gonna reverse what I said about fate. Faith.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm gonna say that in order to play an Inquisitor character, you need that code.
Right.
Or that law, that legal framework.
Maybe
a legal framework is better, because a code could be, like a vigilante code. Or...
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, and that kind of goes into what you're saying as well, Wayne. In order for a legal apparatus to have some kind of binding situation to it, it has to be backed up by a society or some kind of powerful group.
Right.
So, yeah.
I don't know, and you could do it if you put that into a science fiction setting. The Inquisitor is... I mean, yeah, you can have all these different aliens. Yeah, play with that all you want. Mm-hmm. Uncovering, you know, ancient evils on different planets. But yeah, the Inquisitor's called upon because the planets in this galactic empire, they're so separate that they don't have their own framework. So you send in the Inquisitor that goes into that mining colony or that agricultural world, and they investigate and find it. And that might be a lot like what a 40K Inquisitor does.
Mm-hmm.
But they... you want to play him good, you want to play him bad, corrupt, not corrupt, but they are about that legal framework. I mean, that would be interesting character arc where you come in as a jaded or corrupt inquisitor.
Mm.
And, I mean, if you're in a science fiction world, I mean, everything, there is no magic, it's all science, and you uncover something that is truly evil.
Mm-hmm.
And then you need to rely on, I guess, your faith, but also just like that legal framework and dragooning people into helping you because of that legal framework. And that could be how to form a party and things like that.
That sounds like such a fun campaign. I'd love to play that.
Imagine like a superhero inquisitor and he's a super powerful. Yeah, I mean, I know you don't like Superman.
Nobody likes
Chris. Nobody likes Superman. You say like a Superman, or even if you read Kingdom Come, Green Lantern doesn't do anything. He just kind of sits in the sky or sits in space waiting for somebody to attack, but who's going to attack Earth?
Mm-hmm.
So he doesn't do anything.
Sounds like an incredibly exciting comic book.
Right.
Kingdom Come is a great comic book.
Oh. Yeah. Well, it's not just about Green Lantern.
Sitting.
That's what I'm imagining. I'm imagining frame after frame after frame of him.
I think he's in it for about two panels.
Okay.
It's like, oh, where's Green Lantern? Here he is, and here's why he's never coming back. Oh, okay. But that could be that character is the Inquisitor, is the superhero that judges all the other ones and keeps them in line. Not supervillains, but the other heroes.
Hmm.
And then he becomes an antagonist. Heyo, and we've transitioned into antagonists.
Would have been smooth except for your giant announcement of, and we've transitioned.
Really? I thought it was the heyo that was the giveaway. Oh, right. It's so strange. I knew you were going to say heyo when you said that.
We should have like an alarm or something. Whoop whoop. And we've just segged into the next part of our.
I think our segues are usually awkward enough that it's everyone knows anyway.
Yeah. Oh hey, next part. Right.
Oh, we could have like dramatic music, like maybe like kettle drums or something. Oh, I think a seg is coming up in about a minute.
So yeah, antagonists. I don't know. How would you do an Inquisitor as an antagonist?
Oh, didn't you just say how evil they were? Oh, yeah, is that sarcasm? Heyo.
Time for another seg.
Oh, jeez.
Now, as I
said
before,
kettle drums building up the sarcasm.
All right.
Inquisitor. Dun, 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 dun. How would you do them as
evil? I don't know.
Maybe like a little piccolo.
Jeez, are you done yet?
I keep thinking of Peter the Wolf. Remember that? Like the oboe is
the
wolf?
The sarcasm is the oboe, the wolf is a subject change, yeah. Anyway, you're saying, Wayne?
Oh, I think the thing to do with Inquisitors as antagonists is not to leave out the individuality of each Inquisitor, but the thing, as I said before, that was most scary to me was the fact that they have this giant organization behind them. So they almost kind of become the Men in Black or the people who, or the not people, but the organization who have agents everywhere. Yeah. And tying back to that thing about the articles, make sure I'm getting it right.
I think you've already said individuality, so I don't think we have to worry about getting things right.
I was trying to think of the, what was it called, Chris? Articles of Grace?
Articles of Grace.
Yeah. Getting back to the Articles of Grace, which encouraged people to, you know, essentially tattletale on each other. Again, that paranoia, I think, is what you want to play up if you are using the Inquisition as antagonist.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. When I tried to imagine Inquisitor as an antagonist, my mind kind of went to away from the idea of having them as like a superhero antagonist, the Inquisitor kind of thing, but actually using their power be based inside the organization that they have, you know. Just they're a regular person, but they have this humongous apparatus behind them that can do anything that is nearly all powerful.
Right.
And the contrast, too, with, you know, kind of historical Inquisitors is really interesting as well, in that you have this Inquisitor who's, you know, naming people and getting people to tattle on each other and, you know, burning people at stake in this town. But at the same time, they're supposed to be representing this, the church, which is the epitome of all goodness and fairness in the world. I love kind of that moral dualism to it.
No, yeah, I mean, paranoia, the organization, certainly that's good, you know. It could almost be like a High Noon, where even at the Minions, you're dealing with the Minions, but you know that the Inquisitor is coming.
Oh.
And you have to resolve something before that happens.
Yeah,
you could even... No, sorry, go ahead.
No, that's a different way. Not a different way, but that's a way to do it. You could either have the Inquisitor be kind of the big bad, you know, and the party is kind of always trying to stay one step ahead of them and are dealing with minions, you know, and the minions are there to tie him up, as you said, Lyle. Or it could be the more like the agency thing where they've run across several Inquisitors and more of them just keep popping up. You know, kind of wherever they go, there's another agent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess. I don't know. They keep popping up. Maybe it's because you said popping up, but how would they be scary?
Well, again, playing, it's the fact that you just can't get away from these guys. No matter where you go, there is an agent already there, and because they have this giant organization behind you, because they have this giant organization behind them, the communications are probably really good where they already know where you are, or, you know, they already know to be on the lookout for you. So it's almost like they're constantly one step ahead of you.
I think, I think, I don't know, you need a face. You need a main antagonist and not necessarily a faceless organization.
I kind of agree with that, yeah.
Yeah, like, no, I think these guys would be cool and like showing the reach of the Inquisition, but you have like that one particular Inquisitor that's always on. I mean, it kind of sounds like an 80s TV show, you know, the A-Team and
right.
That guy that followed the A-Team. I never actually watched the A-Team, so.
I've watched clips. Whoa, more nerd cred falling.
But I watched lots and lots of A-Team, so I'll make up for the rest of you guys.
No, but I do understand what you're saying. They're going against a faceless organization.
I think it's like your ninja rule.
Boring.
Yeah, it's a good point, Lyle.
The inverse ninja rule. Yeah, I can see that.
So
where when you finally do have that showdown with that one Inquisitor, he has got all the inquisitorial power in this one guy, and you can't beat him.
No, but he or she would make a great reoccurring villain because they do have that organization to support them. And like even like some of the great organizations in like comics and that, like Hydra or AIM, you still have like one guy to, you know, the leader or something that you can fixate on.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, take the Red Skull, and the Red Skull's in charge and some sort of into like something like that. But there's all these different agents, and you could really play with the betrayal. Like your players meet NPCs, but the NPCs betray them because they're actually loyal to the Inquisition, and then the betrayal becomes real to them when that main bad guy comes into the game.
Right,
yeah, and maybe they're even not, and maybe they're not even part of the Inquisition. You know, they were being tortured, and so they spit out your names.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say, too. It's like, you know, they may not believe in it, or they may not have wanted to give you up, but it's like, well, it's either me or them, so I'm going to give the Inquisition your name. Sorry. Yeah.
You can play the Inquisitor has so much power, you know, his word is a matter of life and death, you know, you can play with it. They can be an absolute jerk, you know?
Ooh, a jerk, wow.
I was going to say
don't
bastard,
hold back.
I can't say, but we're not trying to use swear words online, so, or on air.
No, I like that idea of the innocence betraying you. Mm-hmm. Because there's anybody can do it. I mean, and if somebody wants to cheat and is like, oh, I'll cast Detect Evil. Oh, no, they're not evil.
Yeah, exactly.
They're their brother or whatever, or sister. No, because I just rewatched a movie that had something like that as a little plot twist, where the person betrayed the hero because the organization had her sister.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, you have a lot of leeway to play with the Inquisitor, too, I think. You could play... I don't know if it would be as effective as just the complete jerk character, but you could play an idiot Inquisitor. Someone who doesn't really understand what's going on. He's very poor at figuring out who's actually guilty at it, so he's just kind of making proclamations at random, but he still has immense power because of that. Or you could have someone who is actually believes what they're doing. You know, they really think that they are saving people's souls by pronouncing evil upon them. What you said just before, Lyle, about casting Detect Evil, and no, the Inquisitor is not evil at all, but he is still doing some pretty evil things.
Or you could just have somebody who's not necessarily evil, but lazy, or even incompetent, but lazy.
Yeah.
So they'll just, you know, they would rather just burn down a town than actually find out who is evil.
Right.
Or I hesitate to say incompetent, but just messy.
Right, right.
Yeah. And that...
I really play with what the definition of evil actually is then.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't thinking incompetent or an idiot or foolish. I was thinking more... I hadn't thought lazy until you said it, Lyle. I was just thinking more even mad, you know, in the sense where they're not quite right. Because then, like, a crazy person with a lot of power, that's really scary.
Yeah,
because absolutely. You never know what they're going to do. And they have the organization behind to back them up.
No, absolutely, yeah.
And one of the big requirements for Inquisitors is zealotry, so, you know, mental stability is not really a big job requirement.
Hmm. Yeah, that'd be pretty scary. Or lazy, yeah. Just like, kind of indifferent, too. That would make a good villain, just like, I don't really care one way or the other. This is my job.
Yeah.
So that's kind of horrific in a sense, yeah.
No, but you can't have an Inquisitor and his antagonist without having some form of punishment or torture.
Because how else are they going to scare people?
Well, there's. I think they need that mundane element. Whether or not they do it magically or through really interesting gizmos, but the Inquisitor, what scares people about the Inquisitor is there's going to be a punishment and there'll probably be a torture.
Right. There's no probably they'll be tortured. They will be tortured, and there probably will be a punishment afterwards.
Yeah. So, I mean that gives them that special flavor.
Mm-hmm.
Or then they're just the government agent, or they're, So what did I say before? Legal apparatus.
Right.
Yes.
So I guess for protagonists, they need that legal apparatus, but for an antagonist, sure. But also, they need that torture and punishment.
Hmm. Agreed, yeah.
I think for a protagonist, they need to have that legal weight behind them to give people pause. You know, when they're interacting with them, otherwise it's just kind of, you'll run into that, the untenable situation where the GM just kind of says, no, this guy doesn't believe you, or he's not going to do anything, and you just hit an impasse. But for antagonists, they need that fear, and they need to display the fact that they will follow up on their promises.
Mm-hmm.
So, because otherwise it's just like, people would walk all over Inquisitors.
Yeah, absolutely.
There has to be the, nope, I said I was going to do this, and I did.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we could go on quite a bit more about the torture, or as Lyle calls it, porn. but we've actually explored that before in a previous episode number 38, which is about torture and interrogation. So if you're looking for some horrible and devious ways to make your Inquisitors more horrible and devious, then that's a good place to look for it.
That was part of the first month of horror that we did, wasn't it?
It was October 12th, 2011, so I imagine so, yes.
Yeah. Oh, okay, yeah.
That's the one I went a bit crazy with the sound effects, too.
I think I was on my honeymoon for that.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, I remember. Was that the one with the rain?
No,
the
it
rain?
Was a vampire one.
Yeah, no.
It was... 2 minutes of vampire.
All movies. Right, all right.
It's like rain. Is this episode ever going to start?
All right, I will not do that for this month of horror. You'll notice that since that last one, there has not been sound effects again.
Well, the month of horror has been our place to play with sound effects too. So this one we can put in like the Peter and the Wolf sounds.
No, you know what you did for the horror, Wayne? Is you put in the screaming.
Yeah, I said I went a bit nuts with the sound effects, and then you brought up the rain for the other one.
Couldn't
the rain
actually
was
hear
the vampire
what...
ones.
So it was like, and next up is
and
you couldn't actually hear what the torture was. It was like we would give the name, but you had the screaming over top of it.
Right. Hey, that was 2 years ago. Come on, give me some slack. I've learned.
Oh, boy. That was funny. No, you learned, and then a year later you did the vampire one.
No, I did not. You looked. That was all the first month of horror.
Okay.
There have not been sound effects since.
All right.
Okay.
And I will stick to that even if I was being tortured.
And that wraps up our first episode in our third annual month of horror. And we looked at the Inquisition.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us again on Idle Red Hands. Check us out online at www.idleredhands.com, idleredhands.com. You can listen to the episodes right there on the website or stream them through iTunes or Stitcher or download them off of DriveThruRPG. You can also comment on our episodes on the website. You can like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter or just send us an email because we love hearing from all of you. And see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Man, I'm loving my radio voices.
DriveThruRPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week. And we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. Drive-Thru RPG, the one true source for RPGs.
Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.